Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of the Good Take Podcast. I'm Zevin Schuster, alongside my co-host up in Northern California, Alexander Hutton. How are you doing on this Sunday evening, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you once again. I know last time when we opened, you talked about what you've been up to on Netflix, so I'll just jump in and say that I finally got around to finishing Tiger King. So,
have you seen it? No, I haven't checked it out at all. I've watched like the Jeffrey Epstein thing.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen that. Yeah, no, I would recommend Tiger King though. So,
I feel like that's very polarizing. Would you still think that it was good if there was no quarantine, if you had other things to do, or is it better? Is it something that's like better food because you're starving or no?
Well, that's a good question. One thing I will say about it is I'm not sure it wouldn't have gotten the hype it had gotten without the quarantine, which means that I might not have come across it and been like so driven to watch it. So I'm not sure I ever would have seen it in the first place, but I'm glad I watched it because it's one of those documentaries where you're just kind of like blown away at how much information they can pack in into like a 45-minute episode, you know? So.
Absolutely.
And so, I think the topic itself is really interesting as well. So.
Well, as long as we're comparing Netflix shows, we might as well compare postseason professional sports league formats.
So wow, nice segue.
That was a nice segue, exactly. Yeah. Right? That's why we get paid so many cents to do this, right? so obviously the last few weeks, there's the NHL announced its comeback plan. Baseball announced it's trying and failing to announce its comeback plan. And the NBA is announced its comeback plan to some to no avail.
Agree?
Well, let's start off. Let's compare the two like moderately successful ones. You have hockey. You have basketball, who are both going to basically go right into their postseason. NBA is going to fit 8 games, but pretty much, you know, just going to head in right into the playoffs. What were your thoughts on each postseason? How did each of them compare? Which one was better? What were your thoughts on how both leagues sort of, you know, adapted in this sort of unique situation?
Yeah, I think the NBA plan is actually stronger. You mentioned by having a regular season. I think I like that they're bringing the regular season to some semblance of a close in some way, that they're figuring out something to do where, okay, we stopped in the middle of the regular season, so let's wrap this thing up and not like jump right into the playoffs. I think that's a better way to do it. You know, the NBA plan, you know, they're inviting, I think, 9 Eastern Conference teams and 13 Western Conference teams, but they only give whoever ends up finishing 9th potentially a chance to make the playoffs. So, like, somewhere from 4 to 6 teams are going to show up, play 8 games, and then leave, which is just kind of, you know, I mean, is that worth it for those teams? I think that's part of the question. So on that end. Also, there's the kind of dangers of it that a lot of people have been talking about the last few days. You know, COVID cases are going up right now in Florida, and it's tough to maintain that bubble with some employees going in and coming out, and not all those people are going to be tested regularly, which might make it tough to stop the disease from spreading. And, you know, if they're not necessarily being tested, it can be hard to trace things back to players and whatnot. The NHL, on the other hand, you know, hasn't announced what the season is going to be yet. They're still doing research and trying to figure that out. And I think that makes a lot of sense. That's one area where I think the NHL has done a really good job, is they're not trying to jump into that too fast, you know, to allow themselves more time to figure out where it's going to be safest to play and where is going to be sort of the least risk of spreading this thing, because that helps get the players more on board. And we've seen that a lot in the last few days.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said. And I think it's sort of, you know, funny. I heard a lot of people sort of critiquing like the NBA, like, what were they doing? Like, it's a terrible idea. And I'm like, dude, like, what are they supposed to do?
Right.
You mentioned that we quoted somebody, I forget who it was, that, you know, every league is picking the best of the handful of bad ideas, which I think is very apropos. I also tend to lean towards the NBA version. I think there's a balance you can find between giving teams who are sort of on the bubble of the playoffs a chance to sort of fight their way in, and also sort of punishing the teams that were already in the playoff format, you know, punishing them and making them play a whole 7-game series against teams that were out in the bubble, like the NHL is doing. I think the approach of giving them a handful of regular season games, if the team's on the bubble, get within a certain amount, or if they're the nine seed, then, you know, qualifying, giving them a chance to sort of then beat the eight seed twice to get in, I think that's much more fair, as opposed to just automatically jumping into a seven game series, which there's no telling that any of the bubble teams would have earned to begin with. But that way, you know, what the NBA is doing by giving the bubble team a chance to earn just a chance to be the eight seed twice without losing, just to get in the playoffs, I think that makes a lot more sense. As for the bubble idea and the employees getting to go in and out, I mean, that's obviously not ideal. I don't know. Right in the world, there's nothing ideal right now, obviously. So I really, you know, I think the NBA did a better job of making lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah, I would agree. And one thing I will sort of say going off that is, any situation where the 22nd best team could win the championship without playing some additional regular season games, like, doesn't fully check out to me. Like, if you're going to give that team a chance, you have to create a situation where they work their way up to get into the playoffs in the first place.
Exactly.
Whereas, like you said, just jumping into the seven game series doesn't really feel like that same.
And we've seen with hockey, I mean, more than any other sport, I mean, there's any team can win any series. I mean, obviously last year with, you know, the Hurricanes, I mean, they had eight seeds to beat one seed in hockey all the time.
Right.
We're both Sharks fans. We remember that they lost to the Ducks.
Yeah.
You know, had the best record in hockey.
Lost, and then a couple years later, the Kings won the Stanley Cup as
the eight seed. I was going to say, too, like, the Capitals have lost twice as the one seed. So,
sounds right, yeah.
In the last decade. So, listen, I mean, am I betting on it now? Would it shock me if the 22 seed, that's like weird to even say. The 22 seed. You know, if they, it wouldn't shock me if they got to the Cup final. It wouldn't shock you, would it?
No, I mean, just riding a hot goaltender or something like that 100%. At the exact right time, and who knows?
100%. Listen, I mean, we saw with the Blues last year, you know, they were in last, you know, in January, and then they had to earn their way into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if they, you know, and I get this is a unique situation. Again, I'm not poo-pooing, you know, it's a criticism, but it's not like a, oh my God, like I understand what they're trying to do. But can you imagine last year if the Blues would have just been with 15 games left, the NHL would have sort of been like, oh, you're in the playoffs, go. And then had they ended up actually winning, it would not have, I think the general public would not be giving them as quite the kudos. You know what I mean? I don't think they would be getting quite the same amount of love. You know what I mean? Versus
definitely.
Them getting their way in, I think was beneficial for them and for how their win is viewed and for like the league, you know, and sort of the healthiness. The healthy competition of the league, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. And also, going off of that, in that same Stanley Cup playoffs last year, you know, the Lightning were the most dominant team all year, President's Trophy by a wide margin, and then their momentum just kind of hit a wall in the first round, and they got swept. I mean, so, and there was no team kind of rolling like that.
I forgot to mention them.
Yeah, I mean, there was no team that dominant this year, but at the same time, you know, the best teams are just kind of had to come to a halt. Now they got to sort of pick it back up again, and everybody is kind of more or less starting from the same place at this point. You know, it's like something we talked about in the last episode is this thing has been going on for so long that no team has like a major advantage or disadvantage momentum wise because they just haven't been able to ride anything for a particularly long time.
Well, so now, do you think that sort of saying a lot logic plays to the NBA? Oh, I love a cat cameo. Let's go with it. I love the
cat. My cat has joined the
Wait,
the broadcast.
Introduce it. Tell us their name. Give us a little bio. This is part of the podcast family.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Yeah, this is Ferris. He's a domestic long-haired. We got him back in like September or October of 2012. So we've had him for almost 8 years at this point.
Nice.
Okay. He's been great to us, and He decided to stop by and make a guest appearance today.
So wait. Say how much better it is to have a pet during quarantine.
I
don't have a pet, so.
Yeah, no, it's been great. You know, it's like some cats like aren't super social or anything, but he loves like hanging out with us and sitting with us at the dinner table and things like that. He really, I think, appreciates the company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of company, Kyrie Irving does not want to be kept company by the rest of the league. In Orlando, he had a lot to say. And my segues are like, gosh, they're like more, they're like Clay Thompson's third quarter. So just like, just threading the needle.
Yeah.
Have you What do you think about Kyrie? You know, in some ways, like it does not shock me at all that it's him who sort of was wanted to be the disruptor. I saw Woj wrote an article literally titled "Kyrie the Disruptor."
Yeah, I saw that.
Him sort of him saying like, I don't want to play. You know, there's too much going on right now. I mean, I'm not even saying he's right or he's wrong. It does not shock me at all that he's the one who sort of came in with this angle, which I think is very legitimate. What do you think about sort of A, him being the one to bring this up, and B, it being brought up, and C, what is the likelihood of it actually, or the extent of it actually sort of taking shape in the next few months?
Yeah. I mean, first, I'd answer your first question. It's very on brand for him to speak up and say something that, you know, maybe some people are thinking, but not everyone is necessarily going to say. He's definitely going to be the kind of person who's going to be willing to just put it out there and say exactly what he thinks. I think that kind of both sides of the potential arguments make sense, and I really get what he's saying. I mean, it could be a bad look for the NBA to come back right now, given all these issues related to race that are going on in the country right now, and there's sort of this lack of COVID testing and resources in some places on top of that, which is something we talked about last time, that it could be a bad look for, you know, for all these rich athletes to have all this access to frequent testing and everything while they're hanging out in this, you know, bubble in Orlando. And at the same, and they're willing to sort of take a health risk so that we as fans can be entertained. Although I do want to just sort of point out one thing that he did say, a quote, I don't have the exact word for word thing, but what essentially it amounted to was, if there's a way to have both where we can continue to use our platforms and basketball's not a distraction, but we can also play, then let's make it happen. So he does want to find some way where both can happen at the same time. He's just not sure.
I'm paraphrasing, but he basically was like, quote, you know, I don't support going to Orlando. I'm not into this systematic racism.
Right.
Nobody is, but.
Yeah, so what that essentially says to me is he doesn't like the plan as currently constructed, and he wants something different where he feels like
the bubble. Then, like, he doesn't want a bunch of black players being sort of, you know, stuck in one, kind of like on like probation, kind of.
That might have something to do with it. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't there hasn't been like a follow up where he's like sort of clarified what he's trying to say yet or anything. So I'm sure that'll come out soon.
No, I like what you said about both sides being kind of right. Like my sort of representation of each viewpoint is, on one side you have Kyrie, but I also, and I would encourage everyone out there to sort of look up what Austin Rivers posted about this on Instagram. Yeah. Like, what he had to say. Did you see what he said also?
I did, yeah.
And I thought basically he was like, again, paraphrasing, but he was like, you know, I really appreciate Kyrie's passion on this. I really, you know, admire his fortitude and his sort of, him standing up for what he believes in, but, you know, sacrificing, like, as you brought up to me when we talked last night, like, when they sacrifice this season, if they do sacrifice the season for this, then the CBA gets torn up, and then it's possible that next season doesn't happen either. So there's a big price to pay. And, I mean, look, there's several players in the NBA or rookies who are going to come up in the NBA whose salary might be, you know, who could really use a paycheck in the next year or two. And so then you're putting a lot of people at risk. And I'm not saying Kyrie's, you know, entitled at all. I mean, even though I'm not saying he's like entitled because he has a max contract, but I think there are enough sort of cons to outweigh the pros. That said, I think in this era, you know, we like to tweet aggressively at each other. We like the hot takes and, you know, Stephen A. screaming. And my dad and I were just bored and watching on Netflix the other night. We hooked up Netflix to our YouTube to our TV, and we were just watching like a Stephen A. rant compilation. Like, everyone loves the yelling, the screaming, the like, no, he's wrong, oh my God. And look, this is the case where, like, I know it's not sexy to say, but like, I think both sides can be right, right? Both sides are legitimate, and both sides make fair points.
Yeah,
absolutely. I tend to lean towards Austin Rivers, but I totally, just like you, I totally see where Kyrie is coming from. I totally get it. And if someone decides not to play for the reasons that Kyrie laid out, I will not throw one bit of criticism in their direction.
Absolutely. No question. But just to go sort of more towards the side of Austin Rivers for a moment, you know, there's kind of this thing of like weighing all the potential options, you know, what is the short term versus what is the long term, and kind of doing a calculation of all the potential options, because, you know, Kyrie's been talking about wanting to use his platform to enact change, and he thinks like the season might be a distraction for that, and that is totally understandable, 100%.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, if the players do refuse to play, like you mentioned, the league has a clause in the CBA that says in the case of an epidemic, if the players refuse to play, they have the right to tear up a contract and force a new CBA. And that could lead to, if they end up going in that direction where they enact that, that could lead to the players not necessarily having a lot of power in the renegotiations. And that has the potential to make it even more difficult for players to speak up about issues in the future. It could go that way, possibly. So all the possibilities there have to be weighed. And, you know, there's multiple options with both good and bad sides to them.
No, I totally agree. And I think, gosh, you know, it's so funny that, you know, everyone likes to sort of, in the NBA, everyone likes to sort of, you know, talk their smack on Twitter, and everyone likes to sort of say why their guy is the best. And, you know, it seems like right now, you know, like when quarantine started, you know, you and I both were like many people, and we were like, man, like, I just can't wait for sports. Like, I need sports. And then now, like, it's with recent world events, it has become not an afterthought, but it's been hard to get excited. You know, I'm not anywhere near as excited for the comeback of sports as I, you know, would have thought that I would have been. I'm not as excited as I thought I would have been when quarantine started. You know, if someone would have told me that my level of excitement would be where it's at, like here, instead of like way up here, you know, I would have been like, you're crazy. But that's kind of where the world is at. And so I, you know, trying to put myself in someone's shoes who's actually would be someone, you know, playing, like actually not even just watching, but taking part in the sort of entertainment, like you said, you know, I just having sort of your heart not be in it, I think that's completely legitimate, don't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's like there are distractions in the real world. I mean, at the end of the day, sports is a game. It's we know we love it. We love watching it and playing it and talking about it. But at the same time, there are sort of these issues that are, you know, far more serious that these athletes, you know, as people with positions of power in society to some extent, you know, have a voice, they have to deal with, and they feel like they should speak up about them. And I completely get that. And
yes, absolutely. And I will say too, sorry to cut you off, I will say too, I did appreciate the Twitter jokes of, man, Kyrie is trying to keep LeBron from getting another title. That was funny. That was funny. We need some light and some levity right now. That was like, man, that's funny. Especially as Warriors fans, I think we can definitely appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you think too, because just to delve in a little, before we move on, just to sort of delve into the Kyrie portion of this, do you think part of this maybe the backlash or the like maybe it not being taken as seriously is because of the messenger? Obviously, Kyrie's like the flat earther guy. He's, you know, gets into some controversies here and there, says some things to the media. Even back when he was with the Celtics, he was, you know, there was a whole like, you know, I got to teach these guys. I called LeBron to like apologize. And then obviously with his, you know, demanding a trade from the Cavs, there was that whole thing. So yeah. I mean, do you think it was like someone like LeBron or Steph has spoken out about this? It would be treated with more like sincerity, and you know, the media wouldn't sort of dismiss it as quickly.
I really do. Messenger? Yeah, no, I absolutely do, because you know, Kyrie has kind of crafted this persona, intentionally or otherwise, as like this sort of weird conspiracy theory guy who can't necessarily get along with his teammates all the time, and you know, had like sort of blew up his relationship with LeBron, and then blew up his relationship with Brad Stevens and the rest of the Celtics, and then, you know, is once he comes back healthy, he's going to team up with Kevin Durant, who is a sort of who's another player who's been embroiled in sort of similar situations. And when you combine all that together, it feels like this guy who, you know, just kind of says things sometimes, and we, you know, shouldn't always take seriously. But in this particular case, yeah, I think he's right. I think you gotta listen to him, even though, yeah, but the messenger is a little bit controversial. I do think that's why there's some people blowing it off in a certain way.
I agree. And it really stuck out to me too, is I saw what Dwight Howard said, and he's obviously never won a title. Right. You know, this might be his best chance and his last chance to win a title. And even he was like, look, I don't know, basketball might not be what's best right now. He seemed uncertain, and that's putting it nicely, to even go back and play. And again, not a star player. And again, I mean, you're not going to see Kawhi or LeBron or Giannis or any of the, like, you know, the stars whose legacy this could really boost, you know.
Right. I mean, LeBron has said that he doesn't think it would be a distraction, that he thinks he feels like he can do both at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, too, I mean, there's no travel. There's no, because I'm curious too, because like, you know, LeBron always does his like off social media during the playoffs usually. And like, there's going to be no travel, no media. So like, from like the warming up and playing and stuff, I mean, that's only going to be like a portion of their day. I mean, I'm sure there's all time to like probably interact with fans, do Zoom with me, you know, do Zoom calls with, like, I'm sure they're like, they'll have plenty of time to put stuff out there. I'm sure their mind will be focused. I mean, but yeah, look, this year might be different. You know, it's sort of, I'm not saying it'll be like spring training, but like when I've been to spring training for baseball before, like it's such a, it's a looser atmosphere and the players are just much more willing to sort of interact with fans. And I'm not saying that it'll be like that, but I mean, as seriously as players will take the playoffs, because they'll be in sort of one spot the whole time, they're going to really look for ways to get away and let their mind go off. And I don't even, they'll let their mind get away. And I was reading too, like, they're not going to be allowed to go on the Disney rides either. So they're pretty much, they're going to have restaurants, they're going to have game rooms, and that's pretty much going to be what they have. So I think, I mean, they'll be, honestly, they might be sort of excited to kind of, you know, put content out there, interact with fans, you know, in a much more sort of free-flowing kind of way than the typical playoff run would be. So I think that is the sort of the whole playoff season has a chance to be, you know, unique in, you know, in ways, you know, that don't just include, you know, the no fans and the bubble aspect, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's been this push to like sort of expand the fan access to the game, you know, more on-court mics, more player mics.
No, there's no better time to do that, you know?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, that could be another thing is, you know, oh, the players, you know, have to go tape this TV segment for something showing what life is like in the Orlando bubble. So that could be sort of another way to get their voices out there, get the message heard, things like that.
Absolutely. You know,
one thing I will say, though, one thing I will just note is Steven Jackson, who was a friend of George Floyd's and sort of in the last few weeks has spoken like very powerfully and very movingly on what happened there. Is he was someone who came out in support of Kyrie Irving and sort of and basically agreed with him. And I think someone who is like him, who is so close to these issues right now, if he believes it's would be a distraction, and if he believes that what Kyrie Irving is saying is correct, I think that's something that has to be taken with a lot of validity at this moment.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, look, I mean, the world is in a place that it probably hasn't been in a long time, and I think that has to be taken into consideration, to put it lightly. But just to wrap this up, then, if we'll get into, you know, if you were put in charge later on. But for this, if you were put in charge for this, which way would you have it go, and which way would you expect it to go?
I can say that the way I expect it to go is that there ends up being a season that side of the sort of aisle and that will eventually sort of win out this discussion, and the players, at least most of them, will eventually show up. Do you know what the situation is? Like, are players, like in the current contract, like, are players allowed to opt out?
So Adam Silver said that if players don't want to come, like, they don't have to, and there won't be any punishment. You know, especially if they're working out with their teams, and they, you know, I'm sure that they'll have to dot some I's and cross some T's, but I don't think that there won't be any league punishment. I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think.
You want to talk about a bad look. I mean, that would be a bad look for the league.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think with that in mind, I do think there will be a season of some kind. Maybe not 100% of the eligible players are going to show up, but I do think we will get basketball this summer and into the fall. So that's kind of how I see it going.
Well, since my segues are already on point today, and you just mentioned that you think there's going to be a season for basketball, do you, Alexander Hutton, hold that same line of thinking, that same wishful, optimistic thinking for Major League Baseball?
That is a very good question. Yeah, there's a lot of negotiations going on right now between the owners and the players. Still unable to work out a deal. At this point, the players have kind of said, we reject the latest offer. We're not going to counter propose. So we're just going to let the league set the season. You know, people have come down on both sides, the sides of the players, on the side of the league. What's your thought on?
I'm 100%, 1,000%, 1,000,000%, 1,000,000%, to infinity and bajillion percent, as little kids like to say, on the side of the players. I mean, right now the owners are not, they don't even want to pay them, you know, their full salary for the portion of games that they would play. Like they're trying to pay them a portion of their salary for the portion of the salary that's already going to happen. Because again, I mean, they play 70 games and that's less than half of their salary. But the owners won't even pay them, you know, their full salary, their, you know, a full salary's worth of 70 games. They want to pay them a portion of that. And I think the players are rightly saying, like, no way. You know, again, you have to remember, not every player is, you know, Manny Machado or Bryce Harper or Meg Trout making $300-400 million. And you have, you know, a lot of guys. I mean, especially with baseball and the whole arbitrator system, which is stupid. Most guys, you know, aren't going to get paid significant money. And by real world standards, it's a lot of money. But by baseball standards, they're not getting paid a ton of money until their sixth or seventh year. So I think, you know, if you're in Major League Baseball and you see the owners trying to like sort of squeeze you out of every last cent, I would be like, hell no, like screw you. Like you guys are better off than us. You know, we're already having to take a huge pay cut as it is because of the season being, you know, significantly shortened. Just pay us our salary, you know, proportionally, you know, to the amount of games that we play. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the whole situation?
Yeah, I do think there are both sides are fault to a certain extent, but I do support the players. I mean, think about it. They're the ones willing to risk their health for our entertainment while the owners get to go nowhere near it.
Like sit in their suite or like in their man cave in the living room.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of that, the league, you know, is signing TV contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, they just got a new one with Turner Sports worth either $500 million or $1 billion, depending on what source you look at. And I don't think that the full prorated salaries for the players, you know, like the per game basis, you just give them what they expected to earn per game for however many games they end up playing. I don't think that's too much to ask from the players' perspective when they're risking their health to go out there and play a game so that we can get entertainment during this time. Like, I don't think that's an extreme demand. You know, I mean, I think on top of that, I think even without fans in the stands, I still think ratings are going to be good this year if there is a season, given everything that's going on with the Astros and now these new details with the Yankees. I mean, it's really going to be fascinating to watch if the two sides can come to some kind of an agreement where people, the players show up to play. I mean, at this point, I think like maybe, you know, a 70 game season with full prorated salaries is what would make sense given how far we are into the season and how much time they would need to get ready to go. Like, I don't think that's an extreme. Like, I don't think, I mean, the owners are treating it like it is, but I don't think it is.
I mean, I don't think it's an extreme either. And, you know, I don't, in some ways, I think the season would be sort of, you know, interesting to see the baseball season treated as a sprint from start to finish, because it's always been like, oh, it's a marathon, long season. You hear managers say that, oh, no, we're just going to like come back every day and, you know, like just come to the ballpark ready to win a baseball game. That's what they always say. And now, you know, a 5-game losing streak would have more meaning. That said, on the flip side, you know, whoever won the World Series, it might be treated as more fluky and less, you know, teams might, I guess maybe the general fan base, the general public might not look at it and give it the same credence. So I think there's pluses and minuses. Just to touch on the Yankees thing really fast, there was a cover on one of my friends from New York sent me. The cover of the New York Post said, you know, sorry, Astros, you know, we didn't cheat like you. And then it was said, you wish. I just wanted to point that out. That was clever. But I'm very interested to see what comes out with that. For those who don't know, the commissioner or the league office wrote a letter to the Yankees to ask to inquire about their cheating in 2017, and now it's going to be uncovered. Should be in the next week or so. And just to add on to, you know, what baseball is sort of losing by the season not happening. Again, folks, this was going to be probably the most anticipated season, at least by casual fans, in a long time. With all the Astros cheating scandal and all the sort of trash talk between Correa, the Dodgers, you know, like Astros games and baseball games, and the Yankees signing Gerrit Cole, there was going to be some serious, you know, hero, villain, heel face for those who are pro wrestling fans out there. There would have been some serious, you know, drama and storylines, which, listen, that's what the NBA has in bulk, which baseball just doesn't really have, because they don't do a good enough job in most people's opinions of sort of marketing their players. I mean, most sports fans don't even know who Mike Trout is, seriously, yeah. Which sounds insane to say, but I think that is true. But baseball has some serious, you know, narrative and storyline juice, and now that, you know, they're not going to have it. But just to tie that up, so when the Astros cheating scandal came out, you had Aaron Judge tweet like, wait, ..
Right.
Question mark. And then yesterday, Carlos Correa, when he subtweeted, just like Judge did, when the Yankees story came out, he was like, wait, .. So he posted the exact same tweet. And so yeah. Like, man, like, I want to play. Like, let's have, you know, everyone loves when there's some smack talk and, you know, when the Warriors and Cavs were talking, you know, throwing stones at each other, you know, it's like plenty of the UFC fighters did. Like, this is baseball. It needs to be spiced up. And it was just about to, you know, be taken to another level. And, to, you know, it's just about to, you know, this season was going to be filled with some serious intrigue. And the longer that it goes on, I don't know if the same magic can be captured next season.
No, I totally agree. You know, I mean, it's like if you expect like two kids to fight on the schoolyard back when you were in grade school, but they decided to wait a week to do it. By that time, the fight rolls around the next week. Not as many people are going to be crowding around in the schoolyard watching, waiting for it to happen, watching around. So I think there's that, and also I think that I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Happens.
Oh yeah, with the Yankees sign stealing thing. I mean, I'm very much speculating here, but I wondered if there's a chance that this turns into the steroid scandal, but for sign stealing. I wonder if there's that possibility yeah. where we sort of uncovered that, oh, basically everybody was doing this. Basically, it became so widespread that yeah. it becomes serious questions of whether that should even be illegal. You know?
I mean, I think it should be illegal, but the question is like how. Maybe the question is possible in theory that the question could come out, you know, years from now. That was the Astros punishment just if they were just one of many?
Right.
Which, listen, I'll be curious to say. I mean, maybe I'm in the minority on this, but I felt when the Astros did it, I was like, yeah, they were wrong and like, oh, like, you can't stand them. But like, there's probably like a handful of teams that are doing, like, there's no way they're the only one. Right? I mean, right? I don't think any of us were naive. Just like when the Patriots got cut. I mean, I was like, man, there's no way that the Patriots can be the only ones doing this. Like, some teams have to be doing this or some variation of this. You know, don't you? I mean,
yeah.
What did you think when the first came out? I mean, do you think that they were, you know, up to, you know, this nefarious plot and no one else, had ever sniffed down that alley before? I mean,
we're talking about the Astros or
Astros and the Patriots, mm-hmm. both.
Well, yeah, I mean. Cheating in baseball is as old as baseball itself. Like, you know, you go back to
wait cheating, you ain't trying.
Exactly. I mean, you go back to the days of like when the Giants were still in New York. You know, the Polo Grounds ground crew was notorious for like doing things that they knew would give the Giants an advantage. You know, like sort of watering the infield a certain way, or you know, sloping the foul lines in a certain way, and things like that that they knew could give their team a better chance to win. I mean, continue on the New York Giants trend, you know, Bobby Thompson shot heard around the world. You know, they later determined they used a buzzer to send certain signals of what pitch was coming to the players. Like, it's been going on for a long time. It's like, so no, it wasn't the first time that anything like this had happened. I do think most of the punishments were justified. You know, sort of what came out, and sort of how deep it went, how many different people were involved in it. But at the same time, no, I mean, it doesn't surprise me then that it's come out that another team may have done something along the same lines.
Yeah, no, 100%. And this makes a potential Yankees-Astros matchup that much more exciting. Again, baseball has some pizzazz that it needed to capitalize on. And I guess it was out of its control, but they need to capitalize on it at some point.
Right.
I mean, the owners being cheap, I get that it's not the first time, but it's probably frustrating now more than ever. Okay, this week for our final special segment, as we like to call it, we are going to have a segment titled If We Were in Charge. We hinted at it a little bit earlier, but this is just things about the sports world that we wish would be different. There's plenty of those, but we're going to focus on just a few. And look, especially during quarantine, there's plenty of times to hope and wonder and theorize and, you know, wish that things were, you know,
the way sports should be.
The way sports should be. Exactly.
What they are. Yeah. You want to go first?
So I'll go first. So we'll start off somewhat easy, and then we'll sort of increase with each one. So my first one is get the Detroit Lions the heck off of my TV on Thanksgiving. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I used to know the reason that they play on Thanksgiving every year. I can't remember what it is anymore off the top of my head. I have read it.
It's tradition, man. That's why they did it in the 1640s. It's tradition.
Any excuse for you to break out a funny voice, you're going to take it, aren't you?
Well, that isn't the reason that it's tradition, though. Like, that's what they said.
It's pretty much tradition.
We need to do things the same way, you know. It's tradition. No one does tradition like we do tradition. I know I wasn't going to do that. It was the opportunity presented itself, and so I thought it would be funny.
For those of you who don't know, we've been trying to figure out how to work in celebrity impressions into the show for as long as we've been thinking of the show. And we finally started it, apparently.
That's a teaser. We'll do an actual impression thing eventually.
Yeah,
that
for
was
sure.
Just, that was mm-hmm. fun.
Do you have more to say on that other than just you want the Lions to stop playing on Thanksgiving? Or?
Well, I've said for a while, like, I think Thanksgiving for the NFL should be like Christmas for the NBA. Like, put your best teams, your best matchups. Like, put the Chiefs, you know, I want to see Mahomes on Thanksgiving. Put the Chiefs and the Ravens. And it's putting the Steelers and the Ravens, which is, like, good. You know, exactly. I wanted to see the Niners and the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys they get because they're, like, America's team. They get the highest ratings. Like, that's fine. But I want teams that are good, you know, good matchups, you know, things like that. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that sentiment of, you know, on Christmas Day, you have Warriors-Cavaliers, you have Warriors-Rockets, you have Clippers-Lakers, you have all these sort of games that a lot of people are going to want to watch. Whereas, I mean, if the Lions, you know, had a really good year the year before, you know, put them against the Packers or something and do that. Like, that in the fact that the Lions themselves inherently is not a problem, but, like, just the need to put the same team on every year, I think it's kind of what you're saying, is the main thrust of your argument, right?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to be at home. Like, let's have, you know, look, I mean, if it were me this year, I would have had the Cowboys. Okay, they have to play every year, but have, like, Bucks, you know, have Brady Breeze, have Niners Cowboys, and have, like, Mahomes Lamar. Like, that would just be insane. Like, why, yeah. You know, why do we need to see, you know, it's always, like, the Lions against, like, the Vikings. Like, you know, like, that's not, I don't know. It's not what Thanksgiving should be. It's not, you know, listen, no disrespect to Lions fans, and I know they haven't been given much, like, ever. So, I you know, I'm sure this is, like, the one thing they have to hold on to. And I don't mean to, you know, if someone may listen to this from Detroit eventually. I don't mean to crap on you guys. I empathize with having a, you know, frustrating team for many years. You know, this may be the one thing that you have to look forward to. Like, I get it. But for the rest of America, that's just not in the top 20 things that we want to see. So, mm-hmm. All right. What do you have?
All right, my turn. Yeah. So last year, the Atlanta Professional Baseball in sort of conjunction with the MLB. So just as a background, the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball has an agreement with the MLB where over the next few seasons, the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball will test out different rules and systems and methods to see if they're going to be applicable to MLB sometime in the future, if MLB wants to adapt them as rules or systems of how they do the game and things like that. Things like pitch clocks and the one I'm thinking about here, which is robot umpires. Last year during their All-Star game, and maybe a little bit more as well that I'm not totally sure, but they briefly experimented with using a robot to help call balls and strikes. And if I were in charge, I would want to explore this idea further. I would put funding and research in to determine whether or not this sort of thing is a viable option, not just for calling balls and strikes, but for more general things in sports. You know, I mean, there should be human error in sports. I don't disagree with that, but I think it should come from the players and not the referees. You shouldn't have the players figure things out for themselves. Like, they shouldn't be their own referees. There should be some kind of arbiter, but you want to make the calls as accurate as possible. I feel like refereeing is I mean, how often, you know, is there a bad call and that's all anybody can talk about from the game the next day, you know? Like, I don't like when that happening. It should be like so rife with inaccuracy. And I don't want to put the human umpires out of a job or anything. I'm not doing with that. Like, they should still have a human there to overrule the computers in case the computer makes an error of some kind, which is,
you know, you just mean like balls and strikes. What about like at first base and stuff?
Yeah, no, I mean put it there too. Like for
and not just that though. Like, would it just test out whether the ball? Do we even have the technology? I mean.
Don't get me wrong. This sort of thing is still years away
from
people ready to go. But I'm not saying implement it today. I'm saying just look at it further in more depth, in more aspects of games, in more sports, and have humans there to, you know, overrule the computers if need be, and maybe, you know, incorporate them into, you know, the rules committees or something like that, where they can still sort of work in their area of expertise and be helpful and contribute to the betterment of the game. But I want to make umpiring refereeing as accurate as it possibly can be. And I think computers are sort of more headed in that direction.
Yeah, no, like, I think that's totally fair. I think I'm conflicted because I think that would get the, you know, would make the game pure, I guess, in the sense that, you know, you get the higher percentage of calls being right. I think the question that Major League Baseball will have to weigh is, is it worth potentially losing viewers? I mean, it's possible to me, someone might turn on a game and see it being very overly robotic and very, you know, too sort of like, you know, like a, too like sort of structured like a cable news segment and just be like kind of turned off. It's like, that's not, you know, it just may not be sort of like loose enough for the average viewer. And I might not be a huge deal. I mean, as long as you have the players playing, like, that should be fine. But I think some people would legitimately be like, oh, you're using robots? Like, again, baseball, like everything in every sport, like, baseball will always have its share of diehard, you know, fans like us who always watch. But if you're trying to draw in new fans, I don't know if that might be even a small deterrent. And, like, maybe if it is, they baseball might not even care. But I think it's a good thought. And I'm not sure how, balls and strikes, I'm fine with. I don't know. You know, for every single ground ball, I mean, for every time it being put in play to use it also, that I'm not sure that I'm for.
I mean, look, it wouldn't add any more time to the game or anything, you know. It would just be for those. It wouldn't really come up except for those bang bang plays, you know. I mean, on most ground balls, you can tell when the player's out.
And yeah.
Like that. So.
So then, my only question would be: that sometimes the thing might, you know, sometimes you can tell, like, the curveball will come in at a certain angle, but the machine might mistake it as a strike because it came in a certain zone, even though, you know.
And don't get me wrong, I do think you should have one or two human umpires there to be able to overrule a call. That's actually what.
But then when do they overrule? Well, why do you overrule for them, but not for us? Like, that's not fair. Like, how do you work that?
That is something that would need to be figured out. I mean, you think that if it's it would be pretty obvious when the computer misses a call that the umpire can.
Yeah, but once you that's like the whole free speech thing with Facebook and Twitter, which, not to get political, but it's like once you do one, then it's like, whoa, then you're like, then you open up Pandora's box. You know what I mean? Not that I don't agree with you somewhat, but they would just have to be some clear line drawn on the sand, like, when do we do this? Because then if you just say, well, we'll review it at our discretion, then you're gonna have that person's discretion questioned by, you know, fans of the team who gets a call against them. That's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, and this is still something that would take, if it were to be implemented, would take years to develop and figure out. So,
but I think implementing some version of it, I think, would be a smart idea. So, okay, the last one that I have been in favor of for a very long time is an 8-team college football playoff. I have always wanted college football to have its own version of March Madness. I would love on New Year's Day to have, you know, 1 vs. 8, 2 vs. 7, 3 vs. 6, and 4 vs. 5. Just, man, on New Year's Day, I want college football all day long. Everyone's home. I don't know this. There's no sporting events. No, I don't want any other bowl games. Just give me 4 college football games. We'll go from, you know, 10 a.m., you know, West Coast time. So I guess it'll be like 1 Eastern, and then we'll go all the way to like midnight, or, you know, 10 or 11 Eastern. Because, by the way, January 2nd is a holiday too, I believe, for most companies. So it's not like people need to go to bed early. So start the games at 10 a.m. and go all the way to 10 or 11, 12. And you know, look, if you need the end of games to overlap with the start of the next game, like, that's fine. Do the best you can. But I would love just football all day. I think that would just be fun. Maybe I'm just being greedy because I want sports on holidays. But I would just love it. What do you think?
I do think there should be an 8-team playoff, but I just have a couple points to make on it. Sure. One is that I would rather see the quarterfinal matchup spread out over 2 days, not because of the overlap or anything like that, but just because I think, you know, that you and me, we could sit down, watch it all day and just live the high life for that, you know, 12-hour period or whatever it is, and just love it. But I think for the average fan might get a little bit like tired of watching so much football consecutively, and the ratings for the later games might just go down because they're like, oh, I've seen two games already, I'm supposed to move on to the next thing. Whereas I think if you spread it out over a couple of days, you know, maybe have two of the games on New Year's Eve and two of them on New Year's Day or something like that. I think
New Year's Eve, there should be never be any games.
Then it's December 30th and January 1st or January 1st and January 2nd, potentially. Right. I think that will drive the ratings, make it more interested.
And then my whole thought too is, I think I would have, here, I'll ask you first. When would you have the semifinal games? Because I'll say first, I would have the final be the Saturday between the NFL Conference Championship games and the Super Bowl. So like that, the weekend between, and then you put it on the Saturday, and then, oh, then it's Super Bowl week. Then you have a weekend with every, and then also too is, if you know, the NBA is trying to make its, you know, itself a year-round sport. Leagues are trying to make themselves in the news more often, and usually the National Signing Day or Recruiting Day is the Wednesday, either the Wednesday before or after the Super Bowl. So then you could really have, okay, it ends just like with the NBA, you have the finals end, and then a week or two, a few days later, you have draft free agency. I think with college, you could have the same type of thing. But what would you put in the sort of the semifinals, sort of in relation to all of that?
I think you'd probably put the semifinals either sort of the week after the quarterfinal games or the Saturday of conference championship week for the NFL. Mm-hmm. That way, you know, it's sort of all football all weekend.
Talk about a fun weekend of football, man. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. And then you have, and then you have a week to prepare for the championship game.
Yeah, exactly. And then also one more thing I would say, you didn't touch on this one way or the other, but if there is an 8-team playoff, I don't want any auto bids. I don't want the conference champions automatically get in and O-1.
That's the purpose, 100%.
Yeah, because I will say you don't want, you know, an 8-5 Pittsburgh team to be in the playoff because they got lucky and beat Clemson by 2 points in the conference championship game. You know, and then suddenly stuff like that. Like I don't want these automatic bid situations. I like the committee setup or something similar to it, where they rank the top 25 and the top four, or the top eight, or whatever get in.
I think that's true because part of the thing with the top four now is they like have this holier than thou. We're going to reward you for winning your conference, which is like I guess, but that's not really. I mean, I want to see the best teams, like, you know. Maybe if Team X was in Team Y's conference, then they would have won the conference. So, and I get that there's a million and one hypotheticals you can do in throughout sports, but I agree with you. No auto bids. Totally agree. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Well, this was quite the entertaining podcast.
Yeah.
We introduced some new layers to what's to come. This is really fun. Do you have anything else that you want to add? I think we touched on every sport coming back or not. And
yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I'll do a segue of my own. Speaking of coming back, we will be back soon with more episodes, more big stuff to cover and tackle and talk about.
Should we say who our guest is going to be, or we'll make it a surprise?
We'll make it a surprise, but it's someone good.
All right. So again, folks, follow Alex at Alex135 on Twitter. That's Alex HUTTON 35 on Twitter. Follow me at ZShust9, ZSHUST9. Spread the word about our pod. See you later, everybody.
Take care.